This is a replay of the Tuesday night, July 15th WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We have 3 hours to spend together. If it's on your mind, I'll make sure it's on mine. And if you listen regularly, you've heard Laura call in, Laura from Willowbrook, and we get dribs and drabs of her debut as a theatrical director. And I figured we better find out a little more about this. So we'll kick it off with Laura. We're going to meet some cast members as well. So Laura and Willowbrook, welcome back to WGN Radio. That's your cue, Laura.
Hey, Raleigh, thank you for having us. Oh, thank you.
Absolutely.
I coughed and I wasn't ready for you.
Oh, geez. All right. Well, that happens, and it certainly happens in the world of theater. So now let's begin with, and I realize this is a contest, and we'll get into what it is, but how did you get yourself involved in this?
Well, it's funny. I've seen plays with that group before, and I heard about this production going on, and they said, well, we need directors. So I said, well, that's me. And they were accepting people that had never directed before also. I said, well, I'm in.
I love that. That's me. You have absolutely no directorial background.
I was assistant director way back in the 70s, and that is it.
Okay. All right. So here you go. You're going to be a director. Now, at that point, when you said, that's me, you had no idea what you'd be directing, did you?
No, I did not. And we can get a little more into that later, but yeah, it was kind of like almost like a competition as to what you'll be directing.
Okay, so now let's start with the competition, because I know this is somewhat nationwide and all that, but tell me what's involved.
Well, first of all, could I tell you first a little bit about the theater group?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Would that be all right?
Okay. Hey, the floor is yours. You can talk for 3 hours if you want. I got bills to pay.
Okay. Well, you don't say that to theater people. We like to talk.
That's perfectly fine, really. I'll get the master charge out right now. All right, go for it.
Okay. Well, the group was founded in June of 2004, so we've been around for a long time. Green Man Theater proudly offers, you know, vibrant fourth show season. They do along theater arts classes, workshops for all levels of experience. So anybody practically of any age can get involved, and that's nice. We warmly welcome you as both members and patrons of the theater. You could be a patron, you could be on stage, you could do both. The mission for the Green Man is to provide diverse, high-quality theatrical entertainment for the audience. And, of course, we got to create meaningful opportunities for personal growth and, of course, in the performing arts. The Green Man Theater is a proud member of the West Suburban Theater Connection,
All right.
It's been around quite a while.
You don't get to read. You get to talk, but you don't get to read. All right. Now, what I want to know about, when I go to the website for Green Man Theater, the first thing I see is cemetery walks. So,
I haven't heard about that one.
Apparently it's a performance at the cemetery. Two locations this year for two different cemetery walks. So maybe after the play, you'll get together with the dead. All right. So,
that sounds good. So
here the deal is. Now, this is a contest for everybody involved, right? From the playwrights. How were the plays selected?
Well, I have that information. Basically, there was a shout out like, okay, submit your plays. They accepted 120 play submissions. That was it. People were trying to send more in, but it's like, well, we got to stop somewhere. And so, you know, they said, well, you know, it's got to be got to stop at it.
Okay, so the first 120 got in. Was there any type of criteria they had to meet, or was it the first 120 to file?
Well, it was the first 120 to file.
Okay. All right, so 120 budding playwrights submitted a play. How long is the play?
They're 10 minutes.
10 minutes, each. All right. So if it's the worst thing in the world, you only have to suffer through 10 minutes. All right, this is good. And out of the 120, what's the total that actually are selected?
Okay, well, the plays were each read, okay? Each committee read all 120 plays, so I can just imagine having to do that. And they gave a scoring process. And it says, well, we got to narrow it down. So they finally narrowed it down to 16.
Okay.
And basically, they narrowed it down to 16. And the directors, I'm sorry, the people that were selecting in the selection committee, they were not allowed to see who the writer was or where they're from. So it was totally blind. So that, like, they couldn't vote for their friend or something or somebody they knew. They had to vote based on, they didn't know what was going on and just had to read it.
Now, here's the interesting part about that. I assume that all these plays were in English.
As far as I know, yes. Yeah, I got them all in English. Yeah, yes.
You're saying you don't know where these people are from. We assume they're from English-speaking countries. Does it have to be America?
No, in fact, there was a lot of different countries.
Okay.
We had some. Could you believe Australia, Belgium, Canada? There's a guy that sent something from Japan. So it was, I didn't realize that this 10-minute playwriting thing is a big thing. So this is not the only group that does it. It was all over the country and all over the world. I couldn't believe it.
Now, how many different places host this particular contest? You know, because if they wrote a play, I assume they're not only submitting it to the Green Man Theater. They're submitting it everywhere they can.
Well, I don't see why not. I've been involved in this, I've seen other 10-man, this type of thing going on in three different places.
Okay.
But like I said, I've never heard about it till now. It's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, all right. So a 10-minute play contest, and you know, you look that up like on Google, obviously a bastion of nothing, which shows immediately a ton of them. Everywhere. So apparently this is everywhere from Princeton to the Jewish Play Project. All right, so there you go. And everybody in between.
Okay.
All right, well, good deal. This all sounds just lovely. Okay, so 16 plays, you know, we're bordering on 3 hours worth of plays. Are 16 really selected?
Well, no, that's why this, Green Man Theater, it's called, we call it Eight to the Bar Festival.
Okay. All right. So
there's eight plays. Yeah.
Okay. So the most it can be is an hour and 20 minutes of torture.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. All right. So eight budding playwrights. By the way, it is a contest. What do they win?
Well, it's great. On Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of the show, audience votes. And then in 2 weeks, they hear the winner. First prize is $200. Second prize is $100, and third prize is $50, so not too bad.
All right, and some bragging rights, obviously. Get that resume going. All right, so Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, what are the dates?
July 18th, 19th, and 20th, Friday through Sunday.
Wait a minute, that's this weekend.
Yes, ma'am.
Are you ready?
Oh, yes, we are. We have one more rehearsal, but we just had our technical rehearsal Sunday, so it's something else. It's really gonna rock the people's socks off. The audience is gonna be absolutely loving it.
All right. And the name of your play?
Ghost Light.
All right.
Yes, and this actually happens to be, if you've never heard about it, it's about theater ghosts, basically.
Right. Okay. But and yeah, Ghost Light, obviously. But so theater ghosts. All right. So this is going to be a paranormal. Something will appear from the single light left burning on the stage. All right. Well, that sounds pretty good. All right. So now you've brought cast members with you.
Yes, and actually, excuse me. Did I let you know how they went from 16 to 8 plays?
Oh, I assume it was a process of elimination, but if it was more interesting than that, tell all.
Well, the directors that were chosen, I'm lucky to be one of 8, we were given the 16 plays to read, and we were to choose what we wanted to direct.
Okay.
So luckily, everybody got their first choice. So
instead of
16 plays got narrowed down to 8 by the directors chose the play.
All right. Well, that's pretty good. So you got your first choice.
Yes, yes.
All right.
So yes, and I do have 2 of my cast members with us today.
Now, before we meet them, let me ask, I assume something tells me there's a contest with the cast members, too. How are they selected?
Well, that was fun. everybody that's trying out for these 8 plays, they all got to try out for all the directors at the same time. Mm. So that was a challenge, trying to get them to do your play or their play. And it was a round robin of, like, okay, who do you want? Mm. And if nobody else chose their people first, you got them.
Okay. All right. Now, how many cast members are there?
In my show, there's 3. Overall, I actually am not sure.
What? How can you not be sure? You're the director.
I'm not in my play.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Play,
in your play.
Three.
Okay, there's 3
yeah,
in your play.
Right?
Yeah.
I was going to say,
this is not good if you're the director and don't know how many people are in the damn thing. All right. Now, that's pretty good. All right, well, hang on a moment because we will meet Antonia and we'll meet Bill. So don't go away, Laura. All right. So, constructive use of your time, don't you know? 888-876-5593. Though I'm going to hog them for a while longer. But if you have any theatrical questions, because God knows I know nothing about this, by all means, give us a call on WGN Radio.
One ticket, please. Lord have mercy, everybody's here. Hey, what's going on, man? Yeah, she's at home. Yeah, she's at home. Yeah, she's at home. Let the music play. I just wanna dance the night away. All night long. Ooh, 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 ooh. We let the music play on. Just until I feel this misery is gone. Move, kick, and groove, and keep the music strong. On and on and on and on and on and on.
WGN Radio, I'm Ronnie James. I know you're saying play Barry White. Hey, a tubby requested it, and I aim to please. 1976 on 20th Century, she said I could pick any Barry White record I wanted, which was, of course, none of them. So I chose Let the Music Play. And it said tickets at the beginning. I figured it was appropriate. Well, we've got Laura and Willowbrook, a budding director that she is, and you haven't needed a sedative yet, and the weekend's coming up fast. So are we ready to meet Antonia?
You betcha.
All right, so let's welcome Antonia to this mess. So, Antonia of the Green Man Theater, welcome to WGN Radio.
Thank you for having me, Miss Raleigh. I really appreciate it. Nice meeting you.
Likewise. So now tell me, I assume this is not your theatrical debut. You've acted in other things?
I have. This is actually my 3rd production with Green Man Theater Troupe.
Uh-huh.
I've actually been doing theater for probably about 30 years now.
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Did you ever make any money at this?
I did some professional theater in Indiana. That's where I'm originally from. But lately I've been doing a lot of community theater.
Well, neat. What part of Indiana?
I'm from a little town called South Bend.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty well known, actually. No, I've lived in many places in Indiana, places that no one else has ever heard of. So South Bend is the big time. All right.
Right.
Well, good deal. You know, they've got a football team and everything. Good
That's
deal.
Right.
So,
That's right.
So I don't want to put you on the spot here, but I will anyway. Did you know you were going to perform in Greenlight?
Ghostlight.
Ghostlight, I'm sorry.
Well, I knew that I was going to audition for a plethora of plays.
Uh-huh.
I knew that it was going to be a panel, and I did not actually read the script, because usually what happens for an actor in this kind of scenario is you read what's called sides from the plays, and you kind of just do the best. And I don't believe that I was given a side to actually read for this particular show. I read for, I think, three different plays at the time, and one was a generic side. And I had gotten a phone call less than 48 hours, and it was Laura, and she's like, I would love for you to be in my show. Would you like to join me and the other two actors? And I was ecstatic, and I said, absolutely, yes. So,
all right.
Yeah.
All right. So Laura, Antonia was your first choice here. What made you choose her?
Her timing is impeccable. Her the way she delivers her lines, and she just relates to all the characters. I couldn't have asked for more.
Living and dead, I assume. You know, it is Ghostlight. So yeah. All right. Well, good deal. So Antonia, this will be three big days. Do you have a full time job too, or is this something that you do in your spare time, or what's going on with that?
My full-time, I do have a full-time job, and that is a mother of seven kids and four grandkids, and a wife to a very demanding husband. So that's my full-time.
Well, you can put up with anything. No wonder you're volunteering in plays. You will do anything to get out of the house, and I don't blame you. All right.
Well, exactly.
All right. Well, good deal, Antonia. Worlds of luck to you on stage this weekend.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Absolutely.
And just a real quick plug. I just want to let everybody know that the play is going to be performing at Mystic Vines in Villa Park.
Oh, okay.
This weekend.
All right. Good deal. Well, hopefully it will be a sellout crowd.
Thank you so much.
Right,
I appreciate that.
Appreciate that. All right. After the news, we're going to meet Bill. Bill's from Westchester, Illinois. And was Bill also a first choice, Laura?
Yes, he was.
All right.
He was.
All right. So we'll meet him in moments as we continue with our budding director, Laura of Willowbrook, and this weekend's big extravaganza, July 18th through the 20th at the Mystic Ghostlight. All right. We'll pick it up after the news right here on WGN Radio.
July the 12th. Sure was a scorcher. Mama, she'd fixed some lemonade. Sister Beth was sunning in the sunshine. And baby Corey was a-playing in the shade. Looked up the road, and yonder comes a big car. Something we don't see much around here. Big man said, son, where's your pappy? I said, he's over in the cornfield not far from here. They started talking over by the rail fence. It looked like Papa was a-getting mad. walked to the house and Papa was crying. Papa never cried and I knew it was bad.
July the 12th. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. That's a play in and of itself, I'd say. Charlie Rich, and it was Isaac who wanted to hear it this year. Nora Wilson wrote that, and Billy Sherrill produced it in 1970 on Epic. And we're talking to Laura from Willowbrook, who's got Ghost Light coming up this weekend. Now, Laura, when we last talked about this, I understand the play came with sound effects and you couldn't do them. So what's going to happen?
Well, the play is written so well that we really won't miss the sound effects, though. We did actually, we weren't going to miss the sound effects, but we actually did wind up getting some after all. So,
All right.
I wasn't expecting that. It's just because the producer had said, oh, no, you're not going to get that. And then it's like, we go to rehearsal, she's like, oh, well, here's your sound effects. I'm like, oh, okay, thank you.
It's like, what sound effects? You told me there were no sound effects. I got to hand it to you, because if this were me, there would already be blood. No doubt about this. So you're doing very well with this. But, you know, Ghost Light, are they ghostly sound effects?
I just will call them unnatural.
Oh, very good. Very good.
Things you wouldn't expect to hear.
Oh, well, there's probably all of it in 10 minutes, but let's see. Bill is a first-time caller in Westchester, Illinois. He is in your play. And, Bill, what possessed you to do this?
Well, I've been, one, thanks for having me on your show, Raleigh.
Absolutely.
I've kind of come to theater a little bit later in life and really enjoyed it. I've been doing community theater for about 7 years now, and I get notifications of all the auditions in the area, and I saw this play coming up, and I thought it might be fun to audition. And like you said before, you know, I auditioned. I had no idea what play I would be auditioning of the 8 plays. So but I'm really glad I got chosen for this one to work with Laura and Antonia, and it's a great story. So I'm really enjoying it.
Well, this is so good. Yeah, I can't imagine auditioning and not knowing what you're auditioning for. So with that in mind, Laura, what was it about Bill where you said, he's the one?
Well, this character, he plays Al, and this is a very strong-willed character, doesn't take nothing, and he just knows what he wants, and Bill has that character.
All right.
Bill's a nice guy. But he is very strong in this character. He does the sound as loud as it needs, as quiet as it needs. Mm. He's very flexible and does very well. Again, he was my first choice. And I'm so glad that he joined also.
Is his character alive or from beyond the grave?
I don't think we're supposed to say.
All right, very good. Well, then that's a reason to
go.
We've
got to keep people hanging.
Well, that's absolutely true. Yes. So now I understand the playwright and what he gets if the play wins. What does Bill get for this if he wins?
A hearty handshake and a pat on the back.
Oh, and a resume stuffer, I guess, huh?
Yes. No, and the enjoyment. I really am enjoying this. And, you know, there's 8 different 10-minute plays, as we talked about. So total, there's 19 actors in the whole production, plus the 8 directors. And it's also a wonderful opportunity for me to network among, you know, the Western Suburban Community Theater Network. And I know I've worked with a number of the other actors that are in it, but, you know, a number of them I'm meeting for the first time. So I'm enjoying that and expanding my network as, you know, I want to continue to get more involved in the community theater in the area.
Oh, I think it's great, and it's a wonderful social outlet too. And you know, a lot of people, like even people who call this show, really, I won't call them shut-ins by any means, but individuals who, you know, you get to a certain age and you say, I don't know how I'm going to meet people. This is a great way to get out.
Yeah, it's I tell, you know, people that, you know, I have my new group of friends that I've met through the different theater productions I've been in, and you know, so have very much expanded my social network.
That's wonderful. That's absolutely wonderful. All right. Well, good luck this weekend, Bill.
Thank you.
All right.
So It's at Mystic Vines in Villa Park. Come out and see us. I think you'll really enjoy the show, anybody that's in the area.
All right. I hope it's a sellout.
And it's not bad. It's really only $20. And you could go, you know, on the greenmantheater.org, or you can go to rebrand.hv, H to the bar. So that's basically what it's called.
And you got Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Are they all evening performances, or what's the deal?
Yes, 7:30 each night.
7:30, so plenty of things from which to choose. It does. Yeah. It sounds like a lot of fun, but most of all, it sounds like a wonderful outlet. You know, Antonia gets away from the kids. Bill gets to meet new people. It's a sellout. I love it.
And just to let you know, because not everybody maybe has been over there, it's at 219 West St. Charles Road, Villa Park. But it's really a blast, and all the shows are wonderful. I mean, you couldn't go wrong with seeing any of them. They're all great.
Now, I admit I'm not a theater goer, but I knew Ghost Light. Of course, I knew what a Ghost Light was. But the only context I knew this was Marvel Comics. They have a black superhero, and it's the Ghost Light story. Albie Harper is a black physicist. I assume that has absolutely nothing to do with your play.
You're right.
Yeah, all right. All right, but apparently the concept is one that's pretty widespread, which is great. So, I can't wait to hear all about it. So, appreciate Bill. Now, before we go away, Laura, believe it or not, Ruth from Gurnee has questions. And thanks again, Bill.
Okay.
Appreciate you calling. All right, so Ruth and Gurnee, you're up.
Hi. First of all, break a leg to all of your cast.
Yeah.
Yourself, the director. And also, having done the backstage ballet recitals for Round Lake Area Park District, the curtain would go up, and I'd be there sitting in the front row, and I would see all those feet putting things in place while the curtain was going up. And I just kind of had to have a big laugh over that, you know, not expecting something to not be the way you thought it was going to be. Well, my question is, either of you considered becoming playwrights yourself? Would you also consider doing a traveling troupe? And what is the theater? Is it have a history like our Genesee has the real thing and that Antioch PML has the real thing? But a traveling troupe just through maybe, say, Lake County or DuPage or Kane surrounding, you could keep the momentum going and all the work you've put into it. And nursing homes also. Performing with the number in your cast would really be adaptable for nursing homes.
All right, good suggestion, Ruth. I gotta go. Good suggestions. Thank you. Now, I assume, Laura, that one of the issues when you do a play like this is there's a limited amount of performances that can be done before it costs more money for the playwright to get paid. Is that true?
Well, actually, normally yes, but this playwright, because it's the way it's done, it's not like Rodgers and Hammerstein where they get licensed and you have to pay a royalty fee.
Okay.
There's no royalty fees paid for this setup.
Oh, that's great.
So the only thing that costs more is we're having to rent the Mystic Vines facility.
Okay. And now, that's interesting because, of course, from what I understand, the troupe was originally at the Green Man. Why aren't the performances there?
Well, the Green Man Theater space is a church, and they're actually moving out. They're moving. It's not going to be a theater anymore.
Oh, okay.
It's amazing how many churches have a theater.
Oh, well, of course. It's nothing if not theatrical. So, when you get right down to it.
Yeah.
So Mystic Vines, that maybe that will be the new home of the troupe, do you think? Or what's the deal?
Well, you never know. I mean, it's great to work with. It's actually a dance hall / comedy club. And they do have a bar there and a little gaming room. So, I mean, they rent out to everybody, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I saw their website. Birthdays to bar mitzvahs, you name it. So they've got them all.
Yes.
And private parties or whatever. So, yeah, they do rent it. And they have comedy shows and murder mysteries. And so I think this will fit in very well. So do you feel...
The only thing...
Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt. The only thing that, in this case,
I mean, you couldn't do a musical with like 30 people in it or whatever.
Well, no.
This has limited space, so it's probably good that there's 3 to 4 to 5 people in each show.
Yeah.
So we're all backstage at the same time in this tiny space, plus having the scenery to have to move in and out, so that part's a challenge.
Yeah. No,
only thing. It's like it'd be nice to have more space, but other than that, it's great.
Well, you get to know everybody a little bit better. So now the big event is just days away. Is there a final rehearsal?
Yes, we actually have one tomorrow, believe it or not.
And then that's the last one till showtime?
You betcha.
Are you ready?
Oh, gosh, yes.
All right.
My cast, I'm always honest. I don't put up any fronts. I says, you know, if we had to have gone on yesterday, we could have. I mean, we don't want to because we wanted to fix some things with the lighting.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, if we had to, we were ready yesterday if we had to go.
Oh, well, good. So this will be a nice few days as you work up to the main event. Now, assuming your play wins, what do you get?
I get the proud satisfaction that my cast got us the first place or second or third.
Uh-huh.
Or if, even if we don't win something, I just think we win and I win because, hey, they did a great job.
Yeah.
They put all their effort in. I couldn't ask for any more. And they should all and will be proud of everything they're doing.
Oh, absolutely. And just the social aspect of it is priceless. So
yes.
that's winning
yes.
enough. But so the only person who might walk away with money is the playwright.
Yes.
All right. And not a lot, you know, but a couple fast food meals maybe. All right.
Right.
So
right.
So this is 219 West St. Charles.
Yes.
Mystic Vines, but if you go to the Green Man Theater, you can buy tickets there.
You hope so, if they're not sold out.
Okay, greenmantheater.org. Well, the phone is down right now. Email is the best option. All right, well, let's see. Can I buy these tickets online? I don't know. But they've got
yeah.
an email address,
right.
So you can check that out. We've got a webpage for 8 to the Bar. Look at this. All right. And there you are. And there you are up in lights already. All right. Good deal. I wish you the best. I know that this has been an interesting odyssey for you, and I can't wait to hear all about the reviews.
Well, thank you, Raleigh. I really appreciate your support. You've had a lot of great input, and I just thank you for everything that you do for this and what we've chatted about the play and such. That helps a lot.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm happy to do that. And I think it's a great venture for all concerned, regardless of you know how the contest turns out. It sounds like everyone's absolutely a winner. So break a leg and have fun.
Thanks, Raleigh. Take
all right.
care.
Okay, bye.
All right.
So that's Lauren Willowbrook. Yeah, and that's the one thing. Each time Laura would call with this or that or the other, I said, you're not getting paid. Just have fun. Yeah, what else is there, you know, when it comes down to it? And that's great. But really, the idea of it being a social outlet for many individuals who are saying, you know, I really don't have a lot going on in my life. Well, you know, you might consider something like this, community theater. And there's probably other opportunities as well. So I say go for it. All right, so I want to talk about something I love, which is the Sea Crane Company, because, of course, I love radio. But, you know, lately we've all been talking about emergency preparedness for the obvious reasons and everything going on in Texas and such like that. And the Sea Crane Company has a lot of opportunities for that. But, you know, I think one of the best and most reliable is the CC Radio Solar with Bluetooth. Because, you know, you might have an emergency radio, but here comes the emergency and its batteries are dead, right? No power, batteries are dead, what do you do? And maybe it's got solar power too, but it hadn't been in the window lately, so what do you do? Well, see, with the CC Radio Solar, yeah, it'll work on electricity, it'll work on batteries, it'll work if you leave it in a windowsill and use solar power, but when all else fails, you hand crank it for about 25 seconds. It's going to work for about 25 minutes. A little hand crank in the back. And this radio, when I say hand crank, you kind of imagine, what is this? But this is a great looking radio. It's about the size of a brick. It's white. It's neat. And what you get is peace of mind, because when the emergency hits the fan, so to speak, you will always have a radio and you will always have light because there's a built-in flashlight. Not only that, it'll charge your cell phone. Now, not enough to make, you know, calls to your friends and neighbors and all that, but enough to make that emergency call if it came down to it. Because, you know, here's the emergency, here's the phone, it's just dead or in a doornail, what are you going to do? Well, with the CC Radio Solar, you can at least bring it up to the point where you can make that important contact when you need it. It's got a clean, modern digital design. If you go to ccradio.com, you can look at it. And it's a nice, nice radio. Oh, it's got presets. You betcha it does. It's got a digital readout. It's got a clock, a timer, an alarm, and a lighted dial. And yes, and presets. Don't you love that? So it is just a terrific radio, and not big. It's about 6 inches by 3 inches by about 2.5 inches. So not big at all. And man, I'm telling you, that hand crank is probably what one day might save you. So it's peace of mind right there. And if you want the optional AC charger, which I always do, then you can use it on rated day-to-day with electricity. Why not? And when it's fully charged, when the battery's fully charged, the radio runs for about 50 hours. So chances are good you're not going to need that hand crank. But if you do, you'll always have radio, you'll always have light, and you'll always have a little phone charger for that emergency. So it's the CC Solar BT. Now, BT, by the way, is Bluetooth. Oh, yeah, it's got Bluetooth. And you can go to ccradio.com, look at the CC Radio Solar BT, or call them. They've got the world's best customer service, and they'd love to answer all your questions. You can order by phone, or if you just want them to mail you a couple of a catalog or so you can see it for your very self to have and to hold, call them, 800-522-8863, 800-522-TUNE. And if you can go online, that's my suggestion, ccradio.com. Look at the CC Radio Solar BT. I can tell you, you will never again be in a situation where you've got no communication whatsoever. Of course, it's got the NOAA weather band. Of course, it's got AM and FM. I should say that because, you know, every radio that Bob Crane develops has one thing in common, terrific reception, and this is no exception. So check it out. You tell them Raleigh sent you. ccradio.com on WGN Radio.
I had a date for the hop last night. Up to her door, everything seemed right. But to my surprise, as I opened the door, I couldn't tell the front from the back, 'cause she was wearing a cigarette. Woo, what a mess. Shape like a name. No, show me, please. Not for me, please. Well, you can take back your sack, leave it hanging on the rack, and bring a sweater back. But when we arrived at the hop, we started in doing the stroll. I told her I wanted to stop, but she wanted rock and roll. I told her 40 times, and it really was a crime. I was back of her head. No, show me, please. Not for me, please. Well, you can take back your sack, leave it hanging on the rack, and bring the sweater back.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Robert and Stickney wanted to hear No Chemise, Please, Jerry Granahan, who was actually an interesting guy. He, as a kid, worked as a disc jockey and had a voice similar to Elvis's, so he got a job recording demos. I'm not making this up. And he signed with Sunbeam, kind of a nothing label, and went on to record No Chemise, Please in 1958. Sunbeam was in Van Nuys, California. I don't even know who owned it, But he went on a greater success because he played to Dick Clark's ego. He became Dickie Doo and the Don'ts, and the reason for that is because he was on Sunbeam, he couldn't record on another label, which he obviously did on Swan, and Dickie Doo was Dick Clark's son's nickname. So, yes, Dickie Doo and the Don'ts, probably his biggest move. But later, actually, he was vice president of Dot, worked for Randy Wood, and for Paramount Pictures as well, and made it until a couple of years ago, actually. He was originally from Pittston, Pennsylvania, but died in I think it was Rhode Island. In any event, that's Jerry Granahan, and that is your request. Happy to do that for Robert and Stickney. Now, Eduardo is in Tampa. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh. Well, I got completed one day of that convention today.
All right. Now, this is interesting because it's a convention of some type of a fraternity?
Yeah, it's a fraternity.
And it must actually be a big one. What's the fraternity?
Yeah, and then they have like a sorority one Thursday.
Well, what are the fraternities and sororities? What are their Greek initials?
It's conclave. It's something.
No, I mean they have names like Alpha Lambda Delta. You know, they have names.
Yeah.
So what are they?
Yeah, I mean, I could tell you here. Hold on here, because I actually...
Okay, and so this is Phi Beta Sigma. I just looked it up.
Yeah.
Phi Beta Sigma,
yes. Conclave, and then yes. The one Zeta is the sorority one.
All right.
Zeta Phi Delta.
All right, so, yeah, Phi Beta Sigma, it's primarily an African-American fraternity.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's well known, and it was founded at Howard, and we're talking over 100 years ago. So that's pretty big time.
Yeah, you know, I saw on the like some of these shirts they had like 1910s or something like that.
It is 1914 was when it formed at Howard.
1914, okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And like I say, it is a big deal. So it's not small stuff. So good. How many people in attendance?
Oh, I mean there was a lot. I mean, I was there from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. today, and then tomorrow I'm like 7 to 4, and then the following day 6:30 to 2:30, something like that.
Uh-huh.
So I'll be there till Saturday.
All right.
Yeah, so we were scanning, obviously, you know, directing people, but we were also like scanning, printing their badges for the show. So.
Right.
Yeah. Something new to do, so it was good.
Yeah, well,
and we had a nice view too.
Very venerable, so good organization.
Yeah, so I'm glad I got to experience, you know, something new. Actually, my younger brother in Chicago, he would do those like trade shows or shows like that, conventions with his friends, and so they're very familiar with that kind of work. So.
Well, good.
But for me, I was kind of like the first time me doing that.
Well, good.
Yeah. So.
So there's going to be a woman's group coming in?
Yeah, Thursday.
Okay, probably the sister sorority, Zeta Phi Beta?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
And that's Howard as well. Good.
Yeah, they're Thursday, and they run into next Tuesday.
Okay, yeah, they're around since like 1920, I mean, over 100 years.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's the deal. And there are about 9 historically black Greek letter fraternities, and they're known as the Divine Nine.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
All right. And
although
Phi Beta Sigma has its own credit union, by the way.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Okay.
Yes, it does. So, yeah. Yeah, no, it's pretty big time. So, what are they discussing at the event?
Well, I didn't go to any of those. I was upstairs on the second floor.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But, I don't know, maybe tomorrow I can walk around and see, you know.
Yeah. Well, they're very interesting because their philosophy is to be a part of the general community, not apart from. So they're looking to be inclusive, not exclusive. So while it is African American, it's not a thing where they're saying, you know, we want to be separate from. No, they want to be part, and I agree and applaud that, but part of mm-hmm. general society. And they've probably got 600 chapters. I mean, this thing is really big. So
yeah, I mean, like today there were a lot of attendees. Yeah,
yeah.
No, I mean, we'll see how tomorrow is. Yeah,
really, really, really big. So that's the deal, and I think it's wonderful. So I didn't know they had a conclave, and I assume that it's members from all spans of time. Obviously, not the founders; they're no longer with us. But there's a lot of people mm-hmm. who would be steeped in history because, boy, that fraternity has seen it all over the last 100 years. Can you imagine what it was like when they formed versus what life is like today?
Oh yeah. It's quite a change, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And in some ways, no change at all, I guess I want to say. But for the most part, yeah, there were huge strides, at least on paper.
Hmm.
Good. All right.
Yeah. Oh, before I go, I was going to request a couple songs here.
You were, huh? And what would that be?
Okay, the first one is Lee Morgan, The Gigolo.
Oh, all right. See, I thought you'd want Sidewinder, but all right.
Oh, okay.
All right.
And then the other one is Norma Jean Rice, Saturday.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Brought them down. Hopefully I won't lose the paper. Thanks.
Yeah. All yeah. Right. So, I mean, yeah, I'll tell you maybe tomorrow or Thursday how you know, the rest of the convention is going.
Good deal. Yep. Look forward to hearing it. Okay. Thanks. Okay, bye.
All right. Thank you.
All right. So, yeah, and the departed members of Phi Beta Sigma, they're the Omegas. Yes, they're no longer on the planet. There's a whole thing. So there's a number of things about that organization. No small place, that's for sure. So 888-876-5593. Tubby in Chicago, did you hear your song? Tubby. I think I hear you back there somewhere.
I was saying the radio.
I know you're going to get to the phone soon. I can tell. Hello, Tubby. Tubby, don't let your phone fight you. You're losing to your phone. All right.
I'm losing.
There you go. Now I'm losing. Okay, there. I heard you for the first time. All right. Now we got you.
I've been holding it right here. I miss you, but Barry White has been singing in my head ever since I requested.
Oh, no. I played Let the Music Play as on my first bumper tonight for you.
But I wasn't available on the first bumper. Oh. I was talking with me.
Well, I will try to play it again. Well, another Barry White.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you for chiming in. I want to thank Eduardo for chiming in on that. You know, when I worked at Tuskegee Institute, the first thing I learned was when they inaugurate a president to one of those big powers or whatever.
Okay, your phone is really muddy. Do you have your hand near the speaker or something? Let's see what's going on.
I think there. Maybe it's not turned up. Can you hear me now?
I hear you now. Now it's working.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, Eduardo, when I worked at Tuskegee, I was in charge of food service down there, 5,000 meals a day. But what was amazing to me is what I learned. I used to run to those when they used to step, when they had those chalkboard stepping walks in the middle of the night. They would come. They said, oh, they're out there stepping and stuff. But what I really enjoyed, thank you for being so erudite on that information about Howard and how long they've been invested. But the other thing about sororities and fraternities, people just really don't know a lot of. Okay, go back to that other story I want to tell you. When they inaugurate a president, schools like Howard and Harvard and Tuskegee, right, and these big schools,
right,
these institutions have been around forever. The general population often does not know about the intensity of and the importance of You know, you take that job probably for the rest of your life. You retire out of that job once you've been inaugurated as a president of one of these schools.
Oh, okay? Of course.
Both times. And we were courting. Look, we were in Atlanta. We were all over Birmingham. You know, because the sororities and fraternities were all there, which I was unfamiliar because I went to Antioch. I didn't know nothing about sororities and fraternities at all, okay? I was enthroned with the BBM nuns, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And my whole life, you know, going to Mundelein for 2 summers and Upper Bound up here in Rogers Park. So when I went to college, you know, I didn't start traveling until after when I started at Antioch, and then I started doing that co-op stuff, okay?
Yeah.
So when I was at Tuskegee, I was over a group in Miami. I was at Florida Memorial College.
Oh, sure.
And, like, right, up in Opa-locka. Well, what they did is they came and grabbed me out of my office one morning and took me by the tree when they were inaugurating the girls.
Oh, no.
But we had to get tea service for all over Birmingham, Atlanta, wherever we could get it. Because there were so many services that we had to provide catering for on that occasion, for that weekend, that long weekend. I learned so much, but what I wanted to speak on mostly was there are so many things going on in this world where it's not just a rich Hollywood star that has started something because somebody got sick in their family and they wanted to give back.
Mm-hmm.
There are institutions and stuff. And the church I was telling you about, that I was this pastor that I listen to now, who's one of the best 16 preachers in the world, okay?
Uh-huh.
But I learned the definition of a preacher and a pastor, and having worked at Prairie View A&M, and when he preaches, he starts talking sometimes. So that whole area is familiar to me. The New Orleans, you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
The nuances of all these different communities and cities. And what people are doing and what people are not doing. But what impressed me most about all of that was that's a world that nobody knows nothing about. There's a lot of protocol that goes with it. It's just like when you see a black church, the people put their finger up when they get up out their seat to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
It's a sign of respect. And people don't see, like when I've been associated with this church and all. Church where I was in Houston for some time now, at least more solidly over the last year. But it's a deeper meaning because you take all that culture, right? And when you bring these pastors together, everybody he has as a guest preacher gives him and said, we bow down because what it is they respect themselves. But when you want to go, when he inaugurated that guy out south, when he did the installation of the pastor at Salem Baptist. And this guy, I was just listening to him on Sunday night. I like to listen to a good sermon on Sunday evening, right?
Yeah.
And I was just channel surfing, right? So when he got him, he said, keep your hands up, Charlie. That's when I got to know who he was. But what I'm trying to get back to when I talk about fraternities and sororities, whether they be white or black in different institutions, we as in the world are really not from, we got the internet and stuff. You can look stuff up, but it's not second nature to you now.
Mm-hmm.
They just now promote, even on Saturday morning, the football stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And so when you do the church thing, he said, we can't even get no Sunday school passes now because they all deacons and bishops.
Oh, jeez. Jeez.
They're all PhDs.
Yeah.
And they say they bow down. But what was amazing to me is I love the men's choir. This is the real point. Now, my mama's Caucasian. I'm a real Kentucky hillbilly.
Yeah.
My people from Berea and Corbin, okay? On my mama's side. But they don't understand. You don't see that in the media.
Right.
Black men portrayed that way.
Right.
You don't see it. You don't see my Aunt Elna, who was she was the kind with the apron to the bottom of the skirt, the combat boots.
Right.
The missing teeth, whiskers coming out, and her hair braided, pulled back, and gray hair braided with a part down the middle. My Aunt Elder. You don't see my Aunt Betty, who was from, she married a mafia guy, and she was in Elizabeth, New Jersey, and took a cab. When her husband died, a cab everywhere. Aunt Betty, who I got to meet Aunt Betty one time in my whole life, okay?
Mm-hmm.
because it was just like I said before a long time ago. We couldn't go to Corbin. We didn't know we had first cousins because it was safer for us.
Oh, wow.
It was safer for my aunt Elna and her five children.
Yeah.
And it was safer for us up here.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to not know, to intermingle. So what I'm saying, though, is there's a lot of America that people don't know. But I applaud, what's his name, who just called Dwayne? What was his name?
Eduardo.
Thank you, Eduardo. Yeah. There are more, there's not just rich people that start organizations. They have been institutions of all kind of folk. And that's what we need right now. I think that we're just more people sticking to the good stuff they know. Keeping up with people. I try to keep up with your show when I can. I'm busy. Sometimes I get in late. But then, who's that? Fran? Is Fran going to be the assistant director? Was that Fran talking earlier?
No. That was Laura.
Laura, okay. Congrats.
Yeah.
Get in the stuff. Have hobbies. Remember the 4-H club and all that kind of stuff?
Of course. FFA, of course. Tubby, you've ended the half hour. I think Adam's about to hit me if I don't go to a break.
Okay, go on.
Talk to you soon.
Okay,
all right.
Thanks.
Okay, good. Yes, indeed, on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Well, the Hucklebuck, it was a flip side of a whole lot of shaking going on by Chubby Checker in 1960. But it's got a lot more history than that. Now, firstly, we got two requests for that. Billy Bob and Bourbonnais and Linda in Richton both wanted to hear the Hucklebuck. So they get to hear the whole story. The Hucklebuck was a dance. Well, as Chubby Checker was proving, since that's basically all he's saying about was dances. But it goes back to the 40s. And the first version, and there were many versions in 49, but the first one, the quintessential Hucklebuck version, is Paul Williams. Pay attention to this. It's Madison time, the Ray Bryant combo. Oh, yeah. How they got away with it, I don't know.
It's Madison time. Hit it. You're looking good. A big strong line.
When I say hit it, I want you to go two up and two back with a big strong turn and back to the medicine. Hit top. You're looking good. Now when I say hit it, I want you to go two up and two back, double cross, come out of it with the rifle back. Hit top. Now, when I say hit it, I want the big, strong M.
Now, if that's not the Hucklebuck, I give up. But there you go. The Chubby Checker version was not reminiscent of the Hucklebuck by Paul Williams and Lionel Hampton and Jimmy Preston and everybody else. But boy, that Ray Bryan combo, and that's Eddie Morrison doing the calls, by the way. If that ain't the Hucklebuck, nothing is. So there you have that. All right, 888-876-5593, 8888-Raleigh. Sherry is in Naperville. What's up, Sherry?
Hi, Raleigh. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Okay, I just wanted to say I loved Laura's story and her guests.
Mm-hmm.
It was just so uplifting and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And also Tubby, I love Tubby.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to mention that Birmingham was still pretty much Birmingham, Alabama. She mentioned Birmingham for some reason. I was appalled, disgusted in 1979, and I think I was probably 18 or 19, because I was in a drum corps, and we toured all over the U.S. and competed, and when we got there, they said, because we stayed in schools, and they said we could use a pool, but if we had any black person in our corps, we couldn't swim in the pool.
In 1979, that was actually illegal.
Well, it happened.
Yeah, I don't doubt it, but that was no longer legal, thank God.
Well, it happened there. Just everybody's stories are so wonderful. I mean, they're uplifting versus some of the others.
Mm-hmm.
Eduardo and his Greek things. Greek frats and sororities are a lot different than they were in the beginning.
Well, they're not. Wait a minute. One size doesn't fit all. There's fraternities that are quite different from one another.
Well, my point is that when I went to undergrad at Northern Illinois University, my aunt said, if you're going to rush, tell them I'm a legacy. And I did go to her house and try to, what do they call that? Rush. And there was a fraternity on the other corner they asked all these stupid questions, how much money does your dad make, X, Y, and Z?
Well, again, I got to say that fraternities and sororities run the gamut. So it really isn't, you can't paint it with a broad brush. Some will do exactly what you're saying, but not all.
No, but when I heard the panty raid part, and that you had to go to these mixer parties with your
in some cases, again, I'm getting back to this.
You were required.
Yes.
And then when I heard that they stole tests from professors in the file cabinets.
Okay,
but anyway.
So you didn't do that. Never mind. Next.
Yeah. No, sorry. Just really love Laura's story.
All right. Good deal. Thanks.
And Tubby's.
All right. Good to hear from you. Thanks. Appreciate it, Sherry. All right. Now, The Birmingham, Alabama thing, and I understand what Sherry's saying, but by 1979, man, was this illegal. And so what they did was they got around it by quote-unquote private pools for a while. But the bottom line is that, yeah, Birmingham was certainly a working part of the South. And 1964, the Civil Rights Act outlawed certain things, including the segregation of swimming pools. But that continued. And it really was, for whatever reason, about 1979 when Birmingham itself, as a city, outlawed it, said you will not segregate a swimming pool. But again, what happened was the shift toward a private facility, and you're only going to do so much as far as that goes. But as far as public swimming pools, no, that had been a touchstone issue starting with the Civil Rights Act of '64. So no, that was not a fait accompli. There were interesting things like in the '50s and '59 in Montgomery. There was a pool that was closed, a public pool, because of desegregation. They said, no, we'll just close it. And so that's when the private swim clubs started to emerge as a way to avoid the requirements. And yeah, it was not a good time had by all, to say the least. And of course, Alabama, we're talking with John earlier about Nat King Cole and all the things that happened to him over his career. Oh, my dear God. And Alabama was one of the worst, and he was pretty beaten there as far as that goes. And John was like, well, why would he play there? Well, because he's a working musician, and that's where the gigs were. That's where the tour went. So there you have it. 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio. James Hound Dog Taylor. That was Donna Boyd's request, and I played it. That's about all I can. I actually played it before, if not for him, for somebody else who had called. But to me, the most notable thing is it was that album on which Give Me Back My Wig was on, 1971, was the first release of Alligator Records, and many to follow. But it's an acquired taste. I never acquired it. But now maybe you have, and there's Hound Dog Taylor proving that I'll play most of your requests. That's for sure. And we'll continue to do that tonight, as well as take your calls. You know, it's interesting that Sherry had brought up swimming pools, because there are a number of treatises on the connection between swimming pools and segregation. But what's interesting is that swimming pools are not an ancient thing. Oh, I'm sure they probably had them back in the day. But the first municipal pool in America didn't happen until after the Civil War. It was in Boston, Massachusetts, and yes, it was segregated, but and maybe racially too, but the big thing is it was separate for men and women. And, you know, by the time the century turned, like early 1900s, the aughts, as they used to say, 1903, 1908, Chicago Southside opened 11 gender-segregated pools. And none of them were in the predominantly black neighborhoods, though black swimmers did use some of the pools. And, you know, how did that go? Well, it was interesting. Fine and not fine. In St. Louis in 1913, they opened the first gender-integrated swimming pool, but it might have been integrated by gender, but not by race. They refused entries to any, quote-unquote, identifiably black swimmers. Yeah, there you go. It was not just, obviously not just the South, and not just the Midwest or anything like that. Pasadena, California, 1914, in fact, that probably led to a lot of the civil rights movement based on where it was in Pasadena. And what they did was they relegated non-whites to a single day of use each week, and then they'd clean the pool. I kid you not. And obviously, the black community protests. I say obviously because they pay taxes too. What the city said was, well, we have to prohibit all non-white people because if the plunge is open for mixed bathing, most of our citizens will not allow their families to use it. What? Yeah, and that didn't desegregate until 1947. And then when it did, what happened after that? You'd say, oh, well, then everything was fine. No, they closed it. And so you had a number of people, though, who historians who will point to that as really the start of the modern civil rights movement, that Pasadena pool. And you had horrible stories. Like there was a story in Chicago around 1919 where a black teenager who couldn't swim was killed by a group of white men. He was floating on a raft with friends in a beach, and the raft went from a black swimmer's beach to a white only beach, and they killed him. And that led to riots, and rightfully so. And so what you had, though, between 1920 and 1940, this was the first time that there were public swimming pools everywhere. It was the quote-unquote swimming pool age. Before that, that wasn't the case. And initially, the real issue, like between 20 and 35, is it okay for men and women to swim together? And, in the 20s, the federal government mandated racial segregation. Even in D.C., I kid you not, this was a mandate. So, as I said before, when we were talking about that fraternity, boy, did they see a lot of changes in their history, to say the least. And you got a number of things that were good as well. Individuals winning swimming and diving championships who were people of color and things like that. But you had even more violent reactions to segregation and integration. Like in Pittsburgh, they had violent reaction. And what they had violent reaction to was the first gender-integrated pool. And of course, racial segregation was almost secondary in their mind. Oh, not that they were going to accept it, but they were so upset by the gender integration. And, by the mid-30s, you started to have the NAACP filing suit against cities over these swimming pool issues. It was interesting that by the end of the 30s, you were not really seeing much in terms of gender integration. But now the idea that, oh my God, it's not going to be segregated by race, this became a very big thing. And you had a number of things, again, that were good and bad. But probably the biggest thing between 1945 and 1960 was because of the pressure to integrate, the cities just closed the pools. And, of course, that was really an economic divide because those who could afford private club memberships did it, or if they had their own pool, did it. But everybody else did nothing. And so you had at that point, the federal government was changing the way they were looking at things. They were stopping states like West Virginia who were denying black swimmers access to a publicly funded pool, saying you can't do it. So it's a really interesting history all the way around, and certainly in no way confined to a place like Birmingham, though there are stories. All right, so we got another hour of whatever's on your mind, hopefully something a little more uplifting than that, coming up on WGN Radio.
And now the purple dusk of twilight time steals across the meadows of my heart. High up in the sky, the little stars climb, always reminding me that we're apart. You wander down the lane and far away, leaving me a song that will not die. Love is now the stardust of yesterday. the music of the years gone by. Sometimes I wonder why I spend the lonely night dreaming of a song. The melody haunts my reverie, and I am once again with you. When our love was new, and each kiss an inspiration.
WGN Radio, I'm Ronnie James. All right, so let me see, what was it who requested Stardust? And I actually want to know if it had words. Yeah, it has words, and that was just one version of it, of course, Nat King Cole. And let's see, who was I? You know, I was doing so well before. I wrote down everything, but apparently I didn't bother to write down who. Oh, Dave on the North Side wanted Stardust. Now I got it. All right, 888-876-5593. Mark is in Aurora. How's it going, Mark?
I'm pretty mellow tonight and pretty wide awake because I slept a lot this afternoon.
Good.
But you were talking about racial and gender segregation in swimming pools. I've been reading an Eric Larson book for a book discussion group. It's called, it's called The Demon of Unrest, and it was about machinations going on in the North and the South just before the Civil War.
Uh-huh.
And you would not believe some of the things that are said about slavery back in those days. I mean, Eric Larson is quoting original sources. And by the way, Eric Larson is one of the few authors who gives me the pleasure of being introduced to a lot of new vocabulary. And I have to look up every word. You know, I can't just skim it over and keep reading. I got to look every word up. But anyway, one thing I might mention is what Hollywood has done to Abraham Lincoln. I always assumed that he was a bass baritone because Star Trek portrayed him that way in an episode called The Savage Curtain. But
Wait a minute. You have episodes of Star Trek that you had any thought had any necessary resemblance to something accurate? Oh, please.
Well, anyway, Eric Larson's original sources say that Abraham Lincoln's voice was actually high and reedy.
Mm-hmm.
So that was quite an awakening, but people back then were citing supposedly authoritative research from Harvard proving that the black race was inferior, and politicians were springboarding off of this.
Oh,
they
yeah.
were saying that, oh, we owe it to them to enslave them because they're the inferior race, and we have to take care of them and make them happy. Another politician said, go ahead.
Let me ask you something. Some of this was surprising to you? You hadn't been aware of this all of your adult life?
No. I've been aware of it. I was shocked to see it in print from original sources.
Well, no, don't be. This
was, because it just renews.
It wasn't an urban myth. Well, but here's the question,
and
it's a question that I wonder about so often, and that is, of course, we know the history of racism in America, but the bottom line is worldwide there is prejudice against people of color. And my question is, what is it that causes this to be a universal? And, you know, there were places like years ago when I was young, this really wasn't a problem in Brazil. It was very classist, but it wasn't racist. And now, from everybody I've talked to, they're said, oh, no, it's become racist. But why is this, even in Africa, why is this so universal? What is it that makes melanin the determinant? And this is the part that I just don't get. Now, nobody has a real answer for it, obviously.
Well, what is it? I knew a flight attendant who was mixed race, and she agreed with me and an educational television commentator that a lot of this may be rooted in envy. And the idea is that blacks are very good at making music and they're very good at a lot of other things. And what's really going on is that the white race is envying them and trying to hold them down.
Yeah, I've heard that, but I don't think it's as simple as that. That's a nice, quick explanation.
No, I don't either.
But the fact that this can be worldwide is the part that is absolutely mind-boggling to me. And
now,
I'd love to know where it started.
Did it possibly spread from America?
No.
In other words, did the world catch it
from
us?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. No, it was alive and well long before us. And of course, do not let it be lost on you that the slaves were sold to us by other Africans. You know, I mean, it wasn't white guys selling the slaves.
Yeah.
You know, so no, this is long before a thought of America.
Well, and kind of the reverse of that is that when white missionaries go to countries with dark skin, a lot of times the children will scratch the white missionaries because they want to see if they have powder on their skin and they're really dark, but they're covering it up.
Right, but you know, you're gonna see all that stuff in terms of when someone is different from you, and they're not running into that often. That's understandable. But racism, especially you know what we're talking about. This was prominent among all of Europe, you know, in the colonial days and all that. And, you know, the slave trade was just part of it. But why, you know, it has a much earlier origin. And I still say, why this? Why not something else? Why not dark eyes, for instance? What is it about melanin that makes that the big deal?
I don't know.
I don't either.
I don't know, but there was another politician who didn't even refer to race, but he said that he referred to divine destiny, and he said there are some people who are born to be enslaved, there are other people who are born to do useful mechanical arts, and then there are other people who are born to be wealthy and rich and intelligent and to rule the rest of men.
And none of that is unusual. And these are all thoughts that were actually subscribed to by a lot of people. This politician is not an isolated example. So,
What really bothered me was that in those days it was being called Harvard authoritative research.
I actually
have a Bible commentary, which is otherwise a very reputable set of word studies in the New Testament Greek still used today. And the commentator says that we don't understand how predestination works. We don't understand the inherent superiority of the Caucasian to the Ethiopian. And I'm like, whoa!
No, of course.
This is a Bible commentator saying this.
Not the least bit.
But that was really what he believed.
Absolutely, and not even remotely surprising. Yeah. Some of the most bigoted are bigoted in the name of the Lord. But, you know, if you go back far enough...
But see, I don't think he was really bigoted. I think he was just stating what they believed in those days.
I'm calling it bigoted. I know they believed in it, but it is inherently bigoted, whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's unacceptable.
But when you call it Harvard research, you've got a problem because it makes you wonder how much of today's research is authoritative.
Well, if you look at Harvard today, we don't even need to go there. That's for a show that deals with issues, but I rest my case. All right, now, if you go back far enough to the Greeks and the Romans, what you had there, if you remember, this was, they talked about the barbarians. That was not race. That was ethnocentric. In other words, Aristotle was saying that non-Greeks were prone to servitude. So it wasn't linked directly to race.
Do you know the etymology of the word barbarian?
Well, sure. I mean,
it was thought that primitive people made a noise like bar 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 bar.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It was babbler, one who stammers, is where the word comes from.
Yeah.
I was subjected to
blind prejudice going through school. The most blatant example of that was a kid on the bus who said, why don't you go to an institution? That's where you belong.
Well, of course. And, you know, unfortunately...
Oh, that made me feel so good about myself.
Well, unfortunately, though, it has not gotten any better. I always say that that's one of the biggest disgraces in this country is the way people who are blind are treated. And, you know, we talk about this often. You know, like many of my friends say, well, I won't go to the doctor with you because they'll only talk to you. And that's true. And, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've been out to lunch or dinner. What is he having? I don't know. Ask him. You know, I mean, it's just crazy time. And of course, you know, in radio, worked with a lot of people who are blind. New general manager comes in. Well, we have to fire him for his own good. He can't read the meters. The hell he can't. You know, but so it's just horrible. There's always gonna be that.
Oh, but there are ways you can tell by ear if the meters are up too high.
Well, no, I mean there's so many ways. Believe me, that's what I'm saying. So many ways that it's just. And the worst case, years ago, when I was in Philadelphia, I had a great listener, George, and I loved him because he was into obscure oldies like I was. And George worked for the IRS for 20 years, and he was an auditor of big business accounts.
Yeah.
He was a great auditor.
Yeah.
A new boss comes in, changes the software to a GUI, and fires George because he can't see a GUI. Well, of course, if this were the private sector, the government would have been all over him saying it's discrimination. But because it was the government, it stood.
Yeah.
And it's just horrible. Sadly, sadly he died, but not from that directly. But it was just, you know, we could go on and on with those stories because they are endless. But, you know, that said, what is it about race that is universal, that is everywhere? And nobody's been able to fully answer that.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't know. But I had a fellow church member say to me fairly recently, and I should say this is a man who tends to want to speak authoritatively in areas where he has no idea what he's talking about and doesn't have any idea that he doesn't know what he's talking about. But he said to me, well, I guess you're going to hang up your piano tuning tools now that you're totally blind. And
what?
I wanted to say, hey, Carl, that's not his real name, but I wanted to say, hey, Carl, piano tuning is the stereotyped occupation that blind people get into because everybody assumes that they have great ears.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
The fact is that not all blind people do have great ears.
Well, of course not.
But this guy was trying to counsel me based on his utter ignorance.
Well, of course, absolutely, not the least bit surprising. So yeah, it's the human condition, and they're just open ended questions. Nobody's going to have an answer, but it is the kind of thing that does make you wonder.
But I'm going to have to think about that. Why does dark skin give rise to prejudice?
Right, exactly.
I really don't
know. And you never will.
A lot of politicians said, well, you know, we need to have slaves in the South because they can stand the hot sun. They're suited for it. And I'm on and on.
Yeah, we can go
on. And on.
But, you know, there's and there's no easy answer here, but the human condition is it continues to be a fascinating subject. You know, I hope I get a better planet next time. All right.
Let's have some. I wish reincarnation really were true, and I know some people believe it is, but anyway.
All right. Yeah. Well, why not? You know.
Have a good night.
Yeah. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Yeah. I mean that's the beauty of all those arguments is while we're here, none of us can say for sure. You know, all these people with their near death experiences, which I love. I say, yeah, that's the demo version. Yeah, the Microsoft demo ain't like Windows. So you know, who knows? Because so far, nobody's come back. I keep hoping, but the interesting thing about those near death experiences, which of course, as you know, I hear every night because that's what I go to sleep to. Because you know, it's pablum. It puts me to sleep, and usually 10 minutes I'm out. So I haven't like heard the whole thing on most of them. I'm gone. Although lately Air India is putting me to sleep like nothing else. And you know, that report came out on the 12th. So yeah, I've got everybody's opinion of that. And I can't admit that I've gotten through one entire video except the very short ones, but the rest of them, no, I'm out like a light, which is, you know, my goal. But I'm not sure where I was going with that other than on the near-death experience things, it is kind of eerie that they all, you know, with some minor variations in this and this, but they all pretty much have the same story. So I don't know. We'll all find out soon enough. 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio. Yours Forever in Love. And Sergeant Pappy wanted to hear that. It's a very interesting story, actually. Not so much as Dream Airs, but Dave Antrell, who produced it, and it was on Dave Antrell's label. There actually is no Dave Antrell. It was a pseudonym for David Antrobus, who was a doctor in Southern California. And the real weird thing about that is the Doo-Wop Society had, like, psychiatrists and doctors and all that, and Dr. Hitz, Louis Chicoio, was one of my best friends, actually, who sadly is no longer with us. But Dave Antrobus did a number of things, and he probably graduated from medical school around 74, and he had his own practice in Hollywood, Valley Oaks Medical Clinic, and died, sadly, around 95. But he was active in the Doo-Wop Society for a while, and it was interesting that he did some stuff that wasn't doo-wop, like he was, I think, he was the manager or producer of Crow. Remember the Evil Woman? That thing. That was him. But in any event, he wound up really big in doo-wop. And in the 80s, he put out some stuff. And one of them in 85 was the Dream Airs, Forever in Love. And I know virtually nothing about the Dream Airs, but it was on Antrell. And he did several others, the Five Arcades and a bunch of things. And so that's that was the deal. And I think one of the labels was SACTO, which was, you know, short for Sacramento, and then Antrell and all that. So anyway, Sergeant Pappy wanted to hear that, and surprising that he would even have run into that. All right, so 888-876-5593, and we got the news, and then we got your calls coming up on WGN Radio.
There is always a fool in love. What's the matter, baby? What's the matter, darling? Have you found another? What you thinking of? Have you ever seen a fool? A fool in start a crying, don't shed a tear, you don't have to worry, I won't leave you dear, have you ever seen a fool, a fool in
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that is Sergeant Pappy's second request, the Ketones, A Fool in Love. And he gave me four that he wanted to hear, and we'll try to get them. That was 1957 on Old Town, by the way. All right, so we have Scott, and Scott is in Park Lawn. So welcome to WGN Radio, Scott.
Good evening, Raleigh. I hope you're feeling better.
I hope so, too. Thanks for asking.
So you mentioned you don't understand why people are racist.
No. What I don't understand, that's a different question. What I don't understand is why it is this one factor, skin melanin, that is worldwide, everywhere, in every culture. That's what I want to know. That's a much different question.
What I've noticed in reference to gays, I worked in big factories. I was a metal worker, welder, and it was like a social circle. And one guy was started off, and if you didn't follow his lead, you were kind of out of his little club.
Right.
And I had friends I get together with after work, same thing.
Sure.
And then in 1998, after 20 years of being single, I got married to a beautiful woman, and three people in her family were gay.
Okay.
And I got to know the oldest one, and I knew instantly looking at him. His shirt was tucked in. He carried himself with courtesy and respect. And went, oh, I mean, I knew instantly he was gay. And I got to know the man, and he changed my world.
Well,
I told him, told him 100 times, you know, I used to not like gays to the point of, you know, 10 of my friends said, let's go beat one up. I probably would have in my 20s and 30s.
Well,
but I'm so happy I got to meet someone who could just be himself and show me it's just a different lifestyle. It's just, you know, he's not asking me to come in his bedroom and watch. It's what goes on. I heard a good one. What goes on behind closed bedroom doors is somebody else's business.
Well, that, you see, what you're talking about there is the classic ignorance that spews forth these type of prejudices. I understand that. Believe me, I got all that. But what
among small-minded people.
Well, not so, you know, just among people who haven't been subjected. They just don't know. Like I had a friend, my former attorney, who was the greatest guy in the world, Irv Gasfreund. He was an Orthodox Jew. When he went into the service, literally one of the people who was in his unit wanted to see his horns. Absolutely believed
his
the man
horns.
Had his horns, yes, because he was Jewish.
Like,
believed he had horns.
Like the devil?
Yes. Well, I don't know.
Jesus.
I know. Well, anybody from somewhere other than this guy was from deep Arkansas. I mean, this back years ago, of course. But anybody else would look at this and say, you got to be kidding me. So ignorance, I understand. But why this one metric worldwide? That's my question, which is a lot different than why is there prejudice?
Let me tell you a quick story. Let you off the phone with Uncle Tom that became. I love the man. We all went to a bachelor party. He was among the 9 or 10 guys at the table, and we're at a club that the band plays all kinds of different music. 9 guys dressed nice. We're all sitting there enjoying our drinks, and out of 9 people there at that table, a girl comes out of nowhere and goes, "Excuse me, would you like to dance to him?" The one guy that wouldn't, you know, want to flirt with her, we all just rolled her. He wouldn't dance with her. We all just rolled our eyes like, I can't believe this.
Well, you know, I mean, there's great stories like that. And again, yeah, I got all that. But if you can come up with why is it universal that melanin is considered inferior in every country on the planet, there's something there, and I don't have an answer. I wish I did.
Low self-esteem. I got to feel better than someone else.
Well, right. But why this metric? Why is it always the same? Why is it skin color?
That's it. Well phrased.
Yeah, I don't have the answer.
But yeah. I'll tell you what, I'm going to try. I'll probably call you back next week.
Okay.
And with a good answer. Because
okay.
I'm going to talk to Uncle Tom in the next day or two. I'm so happy I married into this family because since I married into this family, I don't talk to my own family anymore.
Oh, man. Well, I don't know that that's so good, but I understand.
No. It's good. It's good because they would make a judgment on something and then not talk to you for 10 years.
Well,
and this family would say he said something stupid and we forgive him and move on.
Yeah. But and that is their loss. But I'm glad that it worked out well for you. Thank you for calling. Let me know what you find out.
I will pose that question, Uncle Tom. Thank you for your time.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Yeah, it's a sociological question. You know, we understand what prejudice is and hatred and all that. We got that. But why is it always the same metric in every culture in terms of why is it racial? Why isn't it eye color or hair color or something completely else? Why is it universal? And that's the part that I've always wondered about. I mean, it's culture after culture, and I just don't understand it to save my soul. Let's see. Don is in Beloit. Welcome back to WGN Radio, Don.
Hey, Riley. Hey, thanks for playing that Hound Dog Tale.
Yeah, I never will again, so I'm glad you heard it.
Okay. Wow, he was such a character.
I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
So.
Did you ever... enjoy Alligator Records?
Or not really.
Such a Chicago
I appreciate that it is there, and I appreciate the history, but it's not my stuff.
Right. I got this, just at the moment, my computer is not working, but I got this great book that kind of I like summarizing with you very much, you know, but this topic is great. It reminds me of a book that I really enjoyed. It was a New York Times bestseller, but it was called Our Man in Savannah, Great Britain's secret agent in Charleston, South Carolina. And this guy, his name was Bunch, B-U-N-C-H. He was a diplomat. He should have been like the ambassador for Great Britain in Washington, D.C., and he felt, you know, based on his history, he should have done that. But many things in our lives, we get stuck in places that we're better off being served. And in this case, he served Great Britain as a secret agent, basically, on the cusp of the Civil War. So he's, you know, being backslapped on one side, but he's reporting back to Great Britain, you know, what's really happened in the South and stuff. And so he's a witness in Charleston to all these great, horrific things. It's one of the greatest books that I've known that sort
right,
of summarizes
but it doesn't,
what you've been talking.
Doesn't begin to address what I'm talking about. You see, that's the thing. I'm not asking for why is it the case in America. I'm asking is why is it universal everywhere? What is it that spans every culture and every piece of geography? And that's a different story.
Uh-huh.
And I don't have that answer. So I'm not looking for why did we have racism in America. All right. That's a whole different thing. But never mind. Don't even want to discuss it. What I want to know is why is the metric the same everywhere? And that's the question, which is a very different question. And no one has ever successfully answered it. In other words, we have, you know, historically in America, treated all people of color as less than. But that's true in every nation on the planet, pretty much. Why? Why is it skin color that is the metric? Everywhere. So you've got different cultures, different beliefs, different traditions, yet they share this common dislike of, fear of, you can name any adjective you want, but basically that it's a skin color metric. Why is it skin color? That's my question. Mm-hmm. Everywhere. And that's
well, it's certainly universal, like you said.
Right,
India,
and so that's
South
the
America,
question. Right, and no one has answered that.
A lot of people don't realize that, like, for every slave that came to America, 10 slaves went to South America.
Remember, I mean, and of course, Africa is a whole other situation, but remember, they were sold by Africans. Let's get straight here. But that's a whole other discourse that I'm ignoring for the sake of my question.
Zanzibar on the West Coast.
Yeah, forget
about some relatives.
Just forget about Africa, though. Like I say, don't muddy the water in the question, which is culturally, you've got many, many different cultures, but you've got one commonality. People of dark skin color are less than in their minds. Now, of course, not everybody. I understand that. But why is that the metric? Why isn't it something else?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. And no one can answer this, that I've seen. And I'm sure there's probably some PhD dissertations, but I've never seen anything that successfully opened this up for me.
I wanted to say just one thing about that. You know, it's interesting. I'm just going to go back to Charleston and pre-war, like the 1850, 1859, 1860. The people that were doing what you're describing were all like very popular newspaper people. You know, they were very like they would just incite a whole nation, you know, half the nation into these racist types of thoughts, right? But they come to Charleston and they start speaking and you realize that these people, this British person that has to leave a double, this Robert Bunch, he realizes that these people, they're terrible speakers. When they have to actually say something in front of a crowd, they're horrible. They don't know how to do diction. They don't know how to talk right. And that's kind of interesting.
And it's all well known. I got to tell you, all well known.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's no answer for this. I'm not expecting someone to solve it. It's just a point that we see this, and there's a reason, I'm sure, but I don't know what it is. It's beyond me.
Yeah. We had a great time in Janesville tonight. We're almost done with the ice arena. Oh. Is getting through its final weeks. You know, it's just kind of funny. Like, it's just every week's another party. I was talking to some people about some furniture that was in the place tonight, and the Woodman Center is going to reopen in September with this new place that the city can't afford and everything.
Right.
So
I'm
going off to Door County in a few days. I'm going off to Door County to relax on the beach.
Very nice. well, enjoy it. Enjoy every minute of it.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Deal.
Well,
thanks.
Nice chat. Thank you so much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
So there you have it. And, you know, not to get onto something deep. It's just something, you know, sociological and philosophical, not looking for real world examples. And, let's move on. Let's move on. Yes, indeed. In fact, let's move on to this on WGN Radio. Well, I thought I had another break. Maybe I don't. I don't know what Adam is doing, but whatever it is, I'll just break early at the end of the night because I'm pretty sure there's another break in this somewhere. And see, I'm trying to do the right thing tonight and shows you that it doesn't pay off. All right, so James is on the south side. All right, James, let me see if I can find my magic twanger that suddenly disappeared. What's up with your bad self, James?
I'm glad you're feeling a little better.
Thank you. Yeah, I hope I am. We'll find out. I go to the doctor tomorrow.
Okay, well, I had come across a story where these researchers had discovered four different subtypes for autism.
Oh, I'm not surprised, but what are they?
Okay, there's the one type that's basically where they're just simply just mild, it's real mild, basically that's one mild. Then there's one with complications that are both from both genetic as well as from other sources. And they realized that early before, when they had just tried to go just straight genetics, that they had only conserved like 20% of where it's truly, where it's all the way where there's genetic markers involved.
They have the social and behavioral changes, the mixed ASD, and moderate challenges broadly affected. Yeah, I had seen that. So I guess biologically distinct subtypes, but I would contend that what we don't know about this is probably so much greater than what we do.
Yeah, and I mean, admittedly, for all his faults, I won't make it even political. The current Health and Human Services guy did at least move to at least where somebody at least wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, well, and it is. It's curious, and it's sad that becomes political, though it has. But yes, I think that investigating why this is so on the rise, and then again, we also say, is it on the rise? I know if I were young today, I would definitely have been diagnosed as on the spectrum. I didn't say a word till I was almost 3 years old. All I said was, So consequently, you know, that alone would have put me on the spectrum. And of course, considering
I was times when I was actually, they were looking for ways to put me in special ed all the way through. But they said, how do we do this with a person whose math is in college level?
Right. Well, exactly. That's right. So, you know, they know so little about the human condition. And that goes back to what I was saying, too, about why things culturally are the way they are. It's all a mystery to us. They say we use only 3% of our brain, and I believe it.
I think there's like certain parts of the brain that I use at different times.
Of course.
But we don't really. And then here's the other thing that we value certain things. Okay, like Isaac Asimov, the late Isaac Asimov had a. He said, "What is it that makes what I do more valuable than what my mechanic does?"
Exactly.
My auto mechanic.
Exactly.
He said, if I can't get to work because my car is broken, then I'm pretty much useless.
Well, and we've seen this in our society because through the 50s, trade and tech was a very big part of schooling. And then into the 60s, they got away from it. Everybody had to be on the college track. And I understand also what the war in Vietnam did. You know, people were majoring in, I don't want to go to Vietnam. I get that. But other than that, trade and tech, man, I'll tell you what, a plumber today is making a lot more money than the guy who's got a degree in sociology, I guarantee it.
Oh, yeah. And in fact, like my high school still did it until, well, of course, they were no longer around, obviously.
Yeah.
And okay, and then there's like a move afoot. I know they were trying to bring vocational things back into the high schools
they
in
should.
The Chicago public schools, like the schools that really had were noted for this.
Right.
And they just simply I hope they can, but I unfortunately also know that because of their own challenges, financial challenges and other things, this may be a tough sled in.
Well, and it's also, you know, again, just like we're talking about autism, it becomes very political, and that muddies the water in such a distasteful way. You know, the one good thing about Arizona, and there's people here who'd like to change it, but they have the best online education. You can go from, preschool to your doctorate and do it all online here with state funding. And I think that's terrific. But there's a number of people politically who would say, well, I don't want that. We want them in a classroom. So, you know, government holds
yeah,
an indoctrination.
Okay. Yeah, but here's the problem. I mean, when you think about especially college, I was noted and I was saying to a friend, okay, I think, what was it, this past year, to go to U of I...
Oh, the money, I know. I hate to do...
Yeah,
oh, I know. The money's astronomical. I hate to do this, but you've ended the show. I'll talk to you tomorrow night.
Okay.
All right,
okay.
So we thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls. Above all, I thank those of you who call. That's what makes the show fun to do, so please do it again 21 hours from now. Until then, that's a wrap. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.